Blog Talk Radio. Jackie Gleason would say, and away we go. Welcome, people. Welcome to She's Raising Bob Blog Talk Radio, coming at you from both coasts. Both coasts. Can you believe it? We got the west side, the west coast covered. We got the east coast covered. So there's really no way of avoiding us if you were trying. You know, we'll probably branch out to Europe, but right now we got that covered. So, and you know, Liz, wait till I introduce you. I was going to introduce my lovely co-host. Holding up her border on the west is the lovely Elizabeth Colossos. Now you can come in.
Thank you. Thank you for that lovely introduction. Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that we were headed to Europe, but we will be soon.
Once we don't have to quarantine, we're heading for Europe. So don't worry, sweetheart. I got it all under control. Don't you worry about anything.
No, it's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me again. And I'm very interested in today's show. Super excited to hear Pam speak and Meryl. And, you know, it's like times are tough with the pandemic again, Lori.
Mm-hmm. You know what's really funny? Whether you're on Facebook a lot or a little, you know, you're familiar with the memories that come up in your feed every day. And looking at, you know, my memories from last year and the year before and the year before, and I was particularly struck by last year, and I was looking at not just myself, all the people in these pictures, and I'm looking at these faces that had no idea what was around the corner in 2020. And it's just amazing. I was just struck by it that within 4 months, everybody's life will change. Every industry will change. And that's largely where we are, you know. And some of us are doing better. Some of us are, you know, treading water. But it's nobody could have seen this coming, you know.
That's a good point, Lori. It really is. Because I was looking as well, you know, how they come up. And you kind of go, God, I shouldn't have taken that for granted. Or who knew this was going to be the deal? Or, you know, who knew that I'd be spending Thanksgiving with the same people? I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Every day of my life. I'm joking.
Yeah.
I'm thankful for my family. And, you know, I think more than anything for me, I'm just surprised at the length of time. You know, I remember thinking, oh, right on my birthday, and I was being so selfish, you know, because my birthday's in March.
Yeah, March. Yeah.
For me. Mm-hmm. And then here we are, November, and my husband's birthday is coming up, and here, and you know, they're talking about in Los Angeles more cases than ever. And a second lockdown, Lori.
Yeah.
So I get it. And New York, you guys are doing better than us, correct?
So far we are. But, you know, again, the numbers are escalating to a point where we're concerned. We're not yet alarmed, but I think we're a sneeze away from that. So that's largely where we are. And, you know, the truth is, most likely something severe will happen or have to happen, and we'll have to pull back and scale back a little bit for us to be where we were maybe 3 months ago. But there will be many casualties with that, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. And last week we were talking about the fitness industry, which is near and dear to my heart, and that we were talking about the two industries that are going to be hardest hit. And it is you know, everything is being hit except for liquor stores. They're doing well, and please let they always be open. But the restaurant industry and the fitness industry, I think, are the two things that are really getting up. Mom and pop stores certainly are, but I'm talking about industries as collectives. They're the ones that are going to be hardest hit. And today we have two leaders in their industries, food editor from the Staten Island Advance, person I actually anointed FDR of Staten Island with a fireside chat that started March 16th. And she went 7 days up until a little while ago. And now she has a show every Wednesday at 9 o'clock on the Staten Island Advance platform, which is called The Dish. So you could watch her every week, and always awe-inspiring. Food editor Pam Silvestri is joining us. And we also have a lady I've known for many, many years. She's a self-proclaimed foodie, but you'd never know it because she's a little slip of a thing. And her work has been seen in New York Magazine, New York Lifestyle, Travel and Leisure. I'm just naming a few. You've probably, if you have a pulse, you've read her column, and that's Meryl Pearlstein, and we are going to bring her on right now. Pam is already with us. Ladies, you're both on, yes?
Yes, I am.
Hey.
There you go. There you go.
Good to see you, sort of. Right.
You know each other. You did the show before together.
Hey, Pam, how are you?
I'm doing great. Everything is wonderful. Couldn't be better, actually.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
you know, I didn't mean to cut you off, Pam. You were saying something to Meryl.
No, it's okay. No worries.
You know, I always have my oh crap moments, and there are certain things that stand out that make me stop and say, oh my God. Now, I'm not in the restaurant industry at all and haven't paid much attention, I must admit, up until this point. And now John and I make it a business to go out and support local restaurants as much as we can. And we even were at Playwrights Tavern in Manhattan last week. And we do the best we can to support people. And one of the best known restaurant here, Liz, and I don't know if you know if they have any type of franchise there. Peter Luger's is probably one of the best known steakhouses on the East Coast. They have the one that I'm familiar with is the one in Williamsburg, and I think they have one in Great Neck.
Yes.
But now we're talking about. I figure you'd know, Mel, yeah. And this is a restaurant that when I ate meat, and I haven't eaten meat in a long time, this was a go-to place because I will say, not as an authority, but you will never get a better steak consistently. You could go there every night if you have the purse to do so. You could go there every night and have a consistently good steak, and equally as good as the night before. So it was never you had to wait for somebody to be in the kitchen. It was a wonderful steak. Now, Peter Luger's was, you know, one of these landmarks, and still is, that you would go there, and it was all cash only. So they had an ATM. Then they were a little bit more flexible. Then you could get their credit card. They had a Peter Luger's credit card, which I think I still have, and that's the only form of credit that they would take. I found out the other day that Peter Luger's is now making deliveries, and not just to catered events of like above a certain amount of people, just family of four, two people, they are delivering.
Right.
And that's when I said to myself, okay, they are seeing way out in the sea. They are seeing that dorsal fin approach. They are seeing something that, oops, you know, this is something we have to consider because this is not a flexible establishment. This is not an establishment that surrenders too much. And here they are, they're making deliveries. Now, Pam has time constraints, so I want to let her, you know, chew on that a little bit, no pun intended, but it was clever. And then, Meryl, you could join in if you like. What's your take on that, Pam?
Well, and I mean, Peter Luger's is, you know, sort of a flagship place. I mean, once they do something, they're really setting a trend. We did mm-hmm. see steakhouses, you know, on Staten Island do something similar in an earlier show. On your show, we had mentioned Ruddy and Dean, which is a steakhouse on Staten mm-hmm. Island that's right near Staten Island Ferry. Very hard mm-hmm. hit because part of their trade was based on tourism, which, you know, has dried up as a result of people not even traveling on the ferry and not commuting like they used to. So, you know, they have to do something, you know, and steaks are a very big inventory. They're very expensive. It costs a lot to not only, you know, inventory a steak, but also to age them. And then, you know, by the time you trim them, mm-hmm. I mean, they're a very pricey item. And with people mm-hmm. losing their jobs and, you know, the economy shifting like it has, you know, mm-hmm. I see it on Staten Island, like I said, you know, with people shifting to other things, lower food cost items, pasta, you know, even breaking into like alternate foods, like, and you know, yeah. it's hard for a steak to travel. You know, a steak is a delicate thing. I mean, once you cook it mm-hmm. To medium, you know, and once you put the container cover on, you know, keeps cooking. But what is interesting is that, and on a brighter note, a lot of places that have these beautiful inventories of meat have turned into almost like a meat locker, and people have been using them as like an alternative to a market. So it's kind of interesting how things shift around. I don't know if you've noticed this where everybody is, but over in Staten Island, there seems to be a new resurgence of panic, you know, like not panic necessarily, but mm-hmm. I mean, it's more like mm-hmm. you see the hoarding again with paper towels. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
I mean, out here too, I've seen it, Pam. I have.
Really, I think that because San Francisco shut their dining last week and Philadelphia did so yesterday, mm-hmm. I think it's just sort of like adding to sort of the alarm bells that are going off. Like, oh my gosh, we're back here at March 16th again.
Mm-hmm.
And
how
long is this going to go on for? You know, so it's a whole mental thing too. You know, very very tense times. It's unfortunate, and we have to make the best of it. And you know, it's all we can do as parents and as, you know, neighbors and things like
that. Yeah. But that's what my point was. They're seeing there's for them to surrender to the need to pivot and figure out something. Because I'm sure, I mean, I don't want to misquote, but I think that, I mean, the one in Williamsburg that I know of, I think they own the building. I'm pretty sure they do. Mm-hmm. They've been there decades. For them to say, okay, you know, this is what we're going to do, there's few things that make my antenna go up and say, wow, okay, they're seeing something and there's an urgency in all this.
Yeah.
I think there's another side to that too, though, Laurie. I mentioned last time the restaurant Rao's. In Harlem,
yes.
And how, you know, it was always exclusive and you owned a table, you could not make a reservation, that type of thing. And mm-hmm. with so many disappointed guests, they pivoted to complete takeout, which is unheard of for them. I mean, absolutely unheard of. But I was also told by the owner that they were busier than they'd ever been. And for a small restaurant, who did maybe one turn or two turns max a night, mm-hmm. this was a gold mine. And they've just added Saturday, which is amazing because they used to only be open Monday through Friday. So now they have Saturday takeout too. So it's pretty incredible. I think the panic is setting in, as you've rightly cited with Peter Luger. But mm-hmm. on the other side, you have some of the ghost kitchens or the smaller restaurants that are really doing okay. Mm. And I hope they survive. Mm. I really do.
Yeah. 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 That, yeah, you know, it, I guess it's – go ahead, Pam.
Yeah, no. Smaller places in particular are really struggling with this, if they have this dedicated sit-down format, because in New York right now it's only 25% capacity. So it's really putting quite a constraint on these places. And these guys, some of these older Italian places just don't shift easily into the to-go format at all.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't adapted to it. And, you know, in the throes of the pandemic, shut down because they just couldn't manage. But, you know, there's a place here called Trattoria Romana, and it's been in business
mm-hmm.
almost 30 years. And the guy lost his lease, basically. And it's really a shame to see this guy in normal situations, people would be flooding a place that they know is going to close, especially if it's a beloved place like this, and the guy can't even manage the capacity, you know, to what it should be. And, you know, people are also scared to eat out, which is another issue, you know,
yeah,
is the fear factor. Like, how comfortable are you eating in the dining room when for several months now we've been told, you know, that restaurants are the place where you're most likely to, you know, communicate the disease, which is,
mm-hmm.
you know, really terrifying people. So,
yeah.
It's not good either way.
So you really have to hope that these restaurants can figure out an outdoor solution as long as possible. You know, that's what we're seeing in Manhattan, that the restaurants
mm-hmm.
are really stepping up their game with heaters, even though the
yeah.
requirements in the city are changing all the time to have new blockades, if you will, that separate
mm-hmm.
the rooms, you know, the room or the tent or the structure or whatever it is from the street, and it has to be filled with water, and it has to be movable if it starts snowing, and all kinds of stuff that the restaurants are now having to deal with, in addition to the thousands of dollars that they probably
mm-hmm.
invested to create their outdoor spaces and buy the heaters and whatnot. But, you know, more power to them. You know, for example, Thanksgiving, I called 3 restaurants before I could get a reservation for dinner.
Wow,
and I'm
yeah.
really happy to hear that. Really, really
mm-hmm.
happy.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
You know, because we struggled with Thanksgiving. Should we dine in? Should we
mm-hmm.
eat in our apartment? Should we not?
Yeah.
And I really just
yeah.
wasn't comfortable having all kinds of people, even though it's a small group, bring in their all
yeah.
kinds of contacts, you know, essentially
mm-hmm.
when we sat around a very small table. So the option was dining outside somewhere, and there are a lot of places offering it. So that's really good. It'll be freezing, or maybe not.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Today's cold. Friday's going to be in the 60s.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing out here, is bringing basically the patio to the street, you know,
mm-hmm.
with the barricades.
Yeah.
And so I assume that's what they're doing in New York, where you can do that.
Yeah, they're doing it on the sidewalks if they don't have any other choice. And if they're able to, they've taken over parking spaces and created spaces of their own, whether it's a tent or whether it's a structure. And some are
right.
quite beautiful. I mean, they've really gotten very creative.
They have.
Oh, yeah.
I have noticed that. Some are charming.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They are. You know, in New York, I did a story recently about the load-bearing weight on the tent in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And by, you know, the Farmer's Almanac and, you know, the look of the squirrels these days, which is on the chunky side, it
mm-hmm.
there's indication that it's going to be a severe winter. So,
yeah,
you know, I know. So you have to... I mean, I always like to look on the bright side, but then there's this sensibility about, you know, oh my goodness, like what's going to happen? It snows dreadfully. But then again,
mm-hmm.
people don't always come out in that kind of weather. But, you know, they have.
Yeah.
I had an interesting discussion with a couple of restaurant owners in a zone on Staten Island, which is like unmarked. On Staten Island, the rates have spiked with the COVID, and part of the
mm-hmm.
island is yellow. Which
mm-hmm.
limits capacities even further. So you can't have more than 4 people at a table and really more than 10 people in a place. And then there's the white zones, which don't have those restrictions, still have to follow the 25% capacity. But it's interesting
mm-hmm.
because people still want to dine out and they feel more comfortable by
yeah.
the ocean. So that's where these places are, you know, where the restrictions are a little bit more relaxed. But
yeah.
still, you know, business wasn't good over the weekend. For Kohl's Dockside, for instance, they were very good. They were very busy on Saturday, but they were pretty much
mm-hmm.
dead on Sunday. Again, the fear factor.
Yeah. And honestly, the more you watch the news, you know, it's very unnerving. So, I mean, you have to, like I've been saying lately, when you're walking through hell, keep walking. Because if you look to your left and look to your right, there's going to be a lot of things that defer you from your destination. Because
mm-hmm.
it is mind-blowing that, you know, and, you know, to Meryl's point of outdoor dining, around the corner from my office, now my office is not that far from Central Park, and anybody who's gone near Central Park, those tailwinds that come out of the park are just enormous. And as I was coming out a different exit the other day, it was an exceptionally windy day, and I'm thinking, how are all these things going to hold up? I mean, you're talking about tailwinds that come at like
easily sometimes 50 miles an hour. And I'm thinking, how is that going to hold up? How are people going to feel comfortable? I mean, I know I try to, you know, bear it and sit there, but I know a lot of people wouldn't. It's got to be a real nail biter for the restaurant owner, just like, you know, you're at the mercy of the weather, literally.
I was really concerned when I read about the new regulations for snow, you know, what's going to happen if it snows and this and that. I just don't know how even the restaurants that have been successful with their outdoor dining, how they're going to manage. I really feel for them. I think the success of the restaurants is going to come down to whether they can do takeout, whether they can do delivery and survive.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe rent out part of their space, as I was suggesting, their kitchen as a ghost kitchen for somebody else too. So they at least take advantage of the space and the facilities and make some money there. But I really think that's what it's going to come down to. You know, we'll get to a point where it's 2 degrees outside and it's snowing and we can't sit outside anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
I was very encouraged by some of the creativity from some of the shop owners and restaurant owners. A lot of virtual stuff is developed. There's a pizzeria in Eltingville on Staten Island that did Mother's Day and a couple of other holidays very successfully with like a virtual wine tasting for mom or whomever.
Mm-hmm.
They had the wines all packed up, you know, by the bottle. And then they had, you know, different items that you can order from select menu, and it was all a pre-fee. And I recently did a wine and cheese tasting over the weekend with some people in my neighborhood. I picked out the wines from the wine store. One woman picked them up, but she bought them, and then she put them in giant Ziploc containers. There were four wines in, like, single-size serving. And then when I got the cheeses at Restaurant Depot, I, you know, carved them up and put them on little platters, and I started it at 12 o'clock and we did a wine and cheese pairing for an hour. So
nice. Yeah, that's a good thing. I know there's a couple of restaurants in Park Slope, and not too far from your son's business, Merrill. And what they're doing now is, because, you know, they've been shuttered, they're making these wonderful wine baskets for the holidays, and they're selling their inventory. And that's how, and a lot of people, and John and I, are going to go get a couple of baskets just because we have to. We want to support, not that we're lushes, but we have to do our community service and get these wines. But I think I thought that was a great idea, because they had this, especially this one that John and I have been, you know, to music reviews. And they have this enormous wine cellar, beautiful. And, okay, let's make some money off of this. We could always restock. And people are coming from all over for these wonderful bags. And they're reasonably priced. It's not like it's anything excessive. So I thought that was a creative way of paying rent, you know, instead of having like a rent party that they used to have in the 50s and the 60s. This is kind of a way of doing it, which is great.
Yeah, that is great. That's really clever. And also what people have done with the mask, I know this sounds a little, I don't know, this is kind of funny. People capitalize on the mask. They sell them from the business. You know, Adobe Blues has a thing where it says Adobe Blues right over the front of the mouth. And over at Kielmeyer's, which is a German restaurant, they have a giant Hummel outside the restaurant. And the owner took
and there's a mask on it.
Yeah. Looks like a giant diaper, actually. But I don't know if you use the tablecloth. But yeah. So a little bit of levity.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I got a delivery the other day from Ottomanelli Steaks, and you know, I think, you know, what some of these markets are doing as well is they have the extra inventory too, and they're getting creative that way. I had a beautiful porterhouse at home, which probably would have never done at home, you know, because they were delivering it, and it was really spectacular.
That sounds.
But I do, getting back to Thanksgiving, since I just wrote several articles on it, how to have Thanksgiving in Philadelphia, how to do it in New York, how to do it in the Berkshires, in the Hamptons, in Brooklyn. And it's all kinds of things that people are doing. They're putting together boxes, you know, really cool boxes. Or they're giving you an option where you can have your turkey pre-cooked, or they'll give it to you just brined and you cook it. And all kinds of stuff. Even 11 Madison Park is doing it. And they were, Chef Daniel Hum was giving you instructions on how to prepare the dinner so you could pretend it was yours. And things like that were really kind of creative.
Well, that's clever.
I really like it. And then, of course, you know, there are all the different nationalities are doing different Thanksgiving things. There are Greek restaurants offering a Greek-inspired Thanksgiving. Mm. There are Italian ones doing it. I am personally going to a French restaurant, which has added a turkey dinner in the middle of their oysters and moule and everything else. So it ought to be kind of fun if it's not too cold. But I think it should be okay. You know, I've eaten outdoors before. You've gone hiking. You've gone camping. We'll survive.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Just bundle up.
Well, you know, I think that we need to be positive. I mean, the last bit of the holidays that are hitting us are probably the most important to every culture. You know, Thanksgiving certainly is, and Hanukkah and Christmas and Kwanzaa. I mean, everybody looks forward to these holidays, and then of course New Year's, which everybody's can't wait to get rid of this year. But I think it's also inspiring that we can have having a different holiday than we might have had last year, but at least we can have something and we could celebrate something. And I think that's the most important thing.
Right. And I definitely don't want to do a virtual or a Zoom.
It just
takes away from it. It's bad enough to do a virtual cocktail party. But Thanksgiving is different. So. Yes, so this year we're not doing it with the other family that we always do it with, but we're doing it with our own family, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
In person.
So as the chefs locally here, they like Meryl was saying about the packages, there's a couple of caterers that we're not as busy, but all of their feasts are, you know, like 4 to 6. They're not doing a whole bird, but they're doing like, you know, a one-part turkey breast, you know, with all the trimmings and such, but still it's like one of the chefs was saying, oh my goodness, I don't have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning this year, you know, it's like, you know, it's freezing cold and I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm.
True. You just have to remember their cutoff dates. Like this Saturday is a big cutoff date for a lot of places if you want to place your order. And then the chefs can manage it exactly as you said, Pam, they can manage it with sanity. This has just got to be so tough for them. You know, paying the rent, figuring all this out, constantly, you know, lobbying for support that they're not getting. It's really, really tough. And you got to feel for those places like, you know, California and Chicago and Philadelphia that have just banned dining, period. I know New York is lamenting the fact that now they have the curfew at 10 o'clock.
I know.
And
I
that
know.
Means you have to be out. You can't just have sat down. Yeah, if you sit down at 9, you're still out at 10, no matter what.
Right.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you something kind of funny that I heard recently. I went to this restaurant called Trattoria Toscana, and the guy was telling me about how people are ordering these top-end wines. I was like, really? I can't believe that. He has, I think, the most expensive bottle of wine in his inventory. It's $5,900.
Oof.
Nobody's ordered that yet, but people have been ordering these high-end wines. Yeah, like at Pastavino, this restaurant that is owned by a celebrity chef, Dave Pastrnak, and Vic Rallo, who has a bunch of restaurants throughout New Jersey. They are selling, you know, $2,000-$3,000 bottles of wine. So I think that there's a little bit of frivolity, you know, with the people who are, you know, they're going out and it's, you know, it's been a long time since they've been out, or it's few and far between that they're business to restaurants. So there's a little bit of indulgence there. I've also heard from restaurant owners, like at the higher end places, that the check averages is actually, even though they're not serving as many people, the check averages are up. So, which is encouraging.
Well, I looked at some of the prefix costs for dining out for Thanksgiving, because that's what I've been researching like mad, and they're pretty high, and it doesn't seem to be a deterrent. You know, it's $150 per person. Plus, and it's not a deterrent. I think people just understand that this is special. This may not happen again for a long time, and they're just going to do it.
You know, I guess if you're not pulling kids out of college to do it, it makes sense because, again, it's, you know, not everybody's so worried about their wallet, and rightfully so. But, yeah, I mean, I think people just want, just like at the end of the Depression, you want to celebrate something. You just want to get out and live life the way you knew it. And, you know, we're 8 months in this. So,
and the holidays are coming. The holidays are hard for people in general, let alone in an environment where we've been in chronic isolation. So, yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
But, Lori, don't you feel that, you know, even with everything going on, people do want some sense of tradition still?
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like people still want to have that feeling of family and feeling of normalcy, you know, and if they're going to, their wallets, I could see it would make sense for them to do it around a holiday because it's tradition is important to most people, you know, and being around family and just maybe trying to forget this for one day. You know, yeah, I totally get it. Totally get it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people decorating for Christmas already. My goodness.
I know. I think people just want to feel happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a news report on that the other day. They said people are just, they want to start the holidays sooner. And they're decorating, they're doing something every day. Maybe they're decorating one branch of the tree one day, then the next day doing another, putting up something the next day. They're not doing all at once. They're staggering it. They're elongating the process so they can smile more.
Yeah.
And I've seen some of the houses have been decorated with lights already. It's nice.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a little happy. A little.
Yeah.
Lori, do you think that when the vaccine comes out, do you think that that would be like people will be dancing in the streets? Or?
I think it's going to be helpful. But, you know, as someone who's got, you know, her feet in the health industry, it's you know, we have every reason to feel there's help a coming, but there are still stages we have to go through. But I think that largely there is reason to celebrate, but we have to really not overthink and overlook the fact that, you know, it might not be distributed as quickly as we'd like. And of course it would go to the people that need it first and rightfully so. But I think just knowing that it's in the horizon is a beautiful thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now we just have to convince everybody that they will do it. They will take it.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the percentage of people who don't get flu shots.
Yeah.
You know, you have the non-believers. Then you have the ones who just won't get vaccinated, period.
Yeah.
And until everybody comes around to understand that this is really critical.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you still have a problem, and it's a worldwide problem. It's not just here. So, yes, it's something to look forward to, and I just found out I'm in the Category 2, however they're categorizing people, to get it if it comes, when it comes.
Okay.
So, looking forward.
Wow.
Yeah. Look, there's reason to feel that there's relief, but we still have a little bit to go. And, you know, that's just the way it is. But the fact that we're talking about it, and now we have to just look at 2021 as definitely starting off in a healthier version of this past year.
I think, too, though, we have to be realistic. You know, the tourism figures for New York are sad.
Mm-hmm.
And the forecast that came out this week from NYC Go is really sad, basically forecasting that we won't have a recovery here until probably 2025.
Oh, my God.
So,
I know.
So we really have to we just have to go with it. You know, it's like after the Spanish flu or after the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
We have years ahead of us, and those of New Yorkers are resilient. We're going to hang in here. And if you're not, then bye. And as they say, slam
exactly
the door
right.
after you.
Yeah.
But those
exactly
of us who
right.
are sticking around, we're going to weather it. And it
exactly
will be
right.
tough. It will be tough.
Yeah.
And this winter, I think, is really, really going to be tough. Just have to keep that positivity. However.
Yeah.
Very important for children. You know, I've noticed, last week we had, it was very sudden on Wednesday night. I was going into the supermarket to get my children's lunch, and I got a message that their school had been canceled and everything was remote indefinitely. And it was like,
God. How old are your kids?
They're 11 and 12. And, you know, I think there were a lot more. I mean, I honestly am a pretty resilient person. I think of myself as kind of tough mentally, but I mean, that was like, I gotta work in the house with them again, you know? But they made the best of it. They, you know, one of my kids went into the dining room took over the dining room, decorated a space behind him so that the Zoom would have like a stage, you know, like he was staging his baseball stuff, you know.
So,
I got to give my kids generally credit for muddling through this, you know.
Yeah. I hope they like each other because that's their socialization.
Exactly. Well, that's a story for another day. But
yeah, that's the toughest part on kids, I think. You know, they really want to be with their friends. They're not meant to be at home. The youngest ones need the socialization to develop, and it's really tough. It's hard enough on the adults, but I can't imagine being a child and dealing with this.
No.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it's
great the first 2 weeks. Yeah. No. I think it's great the first 2 weeks. I know I would have been dancing around the house, driving my mother crazy. But then after that, you realize, okay, you can't go out. That means you can't see your friends. It's not like, you know, I remember when I was sick and my mother would say, okay, you could stay home, Lori, but that doesn't mean people could come and see you. Because she knew. She knew what I was doing. So it's fine for a while, but then you realize, okay, this is going on months and I have no contact. So it's got to be mind-boggling for any child of any age.
I can't imagine it. Just can't. But, and here we are. We still have to muddle through it and find different ways to keep people's spirits up.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've all seen this, but some of the bakeries have come up with new kits, which I think is very clever. One bakery called Moretti's, they're an Italian bakery, and they do donuts, which is sort of a lost art, you know, because they're sort of tedious to make. They don't have a donut machine. But they have, like, a whole decorating kit. Like, you can take your frosting, you put it on there, and then you did the sprinkles, and you can put cookie crumbles or jelly beans or whatever it is on there.
Oh, wow.
And, it's really clever. And all different colors, and now with the holidays coming, everything's, you know, red and green, and it's very sweet. And the cookie decorating kits, a bunch of stuff, cupcake packs, you know. And then one really clever business sprang up. The woman had a private dining room. What she did was she turned it into a pop-up restaurant. So every month she's going to change the concept. So the place, it's called Project Brunch. She had to close one of her two restaurants on Staten Island, sadly. So this focuses on the one that she has further south, which is it's mostly brunch items. But the space next door to her, she turned into a pop-up s'mores restaurant. It's called Toasted S'mores Company. And what you can do is you can go in and you get your customized s'more, and it comes in, like, literally 35 different flavors. And ready to go. Or, you know, you can get them in, cold in a 6-pack or a 12-pack or 24-pack suitcase. And then, you know, you go to your friend's house and you warm them up. And, you know, illegal, but around are these fire pits.
Sounds like a great gift.
Not that I'm encouraging it, but my neighbor, my neighbor is home decorating business, and she said that she's had quite a number of people ask about blackout curtains, you know, to make it turning places into like speakeasies. I was like, wow, that's a great idea. You know? Yeah.
Yes and no. I don't have a lot of love for that idea. I really don't. You know, I saw what happened in Long Island over the summer or recently in the fall with these hidden parties and gatherings. And that's what we can't monitor is what's going on behind closed doors. And it's very, very frightening. That's where a lot of the spread is coming from, apparently.
Yeah.
So, yes, for small groups, not for big groups.
Yeah.
And I think the onus is on the person to be responsible. You know, the thing is, if you want to do things like that, I personally wouldn't want I love people, but I wouldn't want a large bunch of people that I didn't know in my home. And I think the average thinking person would say, well, we're not going to have 20 people in and out, you know. I would hope so, but I might be wrong.
Yeah. I think that sensible people would not do that. And I don't know of any speakeasies that have actually sprung up on the island, but I thought that was kind of a funny thing.
It's a sexy idea, but I definitely see Mal's point. Yeah.
But I like the idea of kits. you know, that people could take home or give as gifts. I think in donut making or cookie making or s'mores making, that's really fun. And the entire family can get involved, which is really nice.
Yeah. It's something we do together, you know. I saw more postings for people carving pumpkins this year than I've seen in such a long time, which, you know, makes sense. I mean, you know, it kills me because I love Halloween and I love going to the door and meeting the kids. And it's sad that's been a dying art anyway. But, you have to keep it, you know, keep it celebratory for your kids, especially if they're of that age. And I was just loving all these pumpkins that I was seeing and people were doing things. It was just indoors and it was just lovely.
Did you get any trick-or-treaters?
I got none. That killed me.
Oh, wow.
I got none either. I had my pumpkin outside. That's it.
And John knows when the doorbell rings, I'm like a roller derby queen. I run and I knock him over so I could get to the door first. And nothing happens. Nothing happens. I love kids and I love talking to them. And didn't happen. And it hasn't happened. So.
Aww.
So I wonder, you know, they just put up the tree in Rockefeller Center. Now, are people going to gather there? Is the ice skating rink going to be open? I haven't heard anything about that.
That's not going to be opened. But I don't know how they're going to govern. No, it's not. I don't know how they're going to govern people. That, you know, there's still people that are going to come in to see the tree. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to try to regulate that at all.
Well, I'm thinking a couple of years ago I was there when they did one of the rehearsals. You know, they have they had live performances there. I think it was John Legend. Yeah. And they had a walkway system, and they limited the number of people that could go through. So they may already have something that they can put into place that will work.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure I'd want to be there, honestly, in the crowds.
I think it's frustrating. Yeah, because people aren't going to be the volume of people that have been there over the years. So that's already, it's canceling itself out. So I think that the people that do show up, they probably will have some sort of safeguarding in place. They would have to.
Boy, I hope so.
Yeah. I'm surprised.
Oh, what a holiday season we have ahead of us. Different.
Well, thank God for the
liquor stores.
That's exactly what I was saying.
Yeah.
Now, Pam, I know you have time constraints and you have to jump off. Is there anything other than your show, The Dish, Wednesday, 9 a.m. on the Staten Island Advance platform, which has been doing fabulously in ratings? Is there anything else that you want to mention before you leave us?
I just on an encouraging note, and then also in putting caterers back to work. I thought it was very lovely to hear of one caterer, Framboise Catering, their take on the holidays, which was the return of the elegant dinner party, to get small group of people together and just throw, the whole energy into the decorations and things like that on the table. So I thought that would be a nice way to end things for today and a nice thought for the holidays.
Yeah.
And I'm so appreciative that you asked me on your show, and I love your guests. I really enjoy listening. It's a real treat to be here.
Thank you, Dolly.
And thank you.
And you could come on anytime you want, Dolly. You're not a stranger here. Of course.
Oh,
of course.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Pamela Silvestri, Staten Island Advance. There we go. Thank you for coming. Well, there she goes. And again, you can see her live stream. She's back live streaming every day from her kitchen, but she's got The Dish on 9 a.m. And Meryl, what I wanted to tell you, because I didn't want to take up too much food time. Liz, you know I had a recording a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yes.
Liz,
you've been very busy.
Yeah. Now, Jim would find this very interesting, Meryl. We had a recording probably 2 weeks ago. Now, recording is very different than it was even just 3 years ago. CDC has a new code that if you have a horn section, they have to be 12 feet apart because of the spray from the bell of the horn. And it was, we had a Barry sax, we had a tenor sax, an alto sax. It wasn't a big horn section. We had to get there the night before and have somebody set up. It was actually the wife of one of the players who was very concerned about him. They had to make a tent for each of them, and they were all on one mic, so we couldn't see them. Nobody could see each other, and if you've ever done any recording, the beauty of playing with musicians is being able to see musicians. And I tell you something, and we had to go last night to overdub some things because the recording was tainted because of that, because, you know, horn players are now having to, they couldn't even look at each other. They were set up with easels. It looked like they were all in incubators. It was the damnedest thing.
Yeah, I've seen that in different areas. I actually saw it out in the Berkshires with theater. The way they did the performance of Godspell, and people were separated. Yeah, they were able to pull it off this summer. It was the only place that did something like that. But because you're singing and you're projecting and you're spraying as if you were with your horns, people had to stay very, very far apart. And if you were percussion, it was a whole other thing. It's a different animal now. But it can be done. And if people have the will to do it, I don't know if you saw way back when, I think it was in April, the Metropolitan Opera did their a gala celebration, and they had all of their players from around the world on a Zoom, like a giant Zoom, 60 people. We asked how they did it, and they were just watching one conductor in one box.
Wow.
And that's how they did it. And it was seamless. It was amazing. I don't know if you can still get to hear it if you didn't hear it, but it was an all-day thing. And it was just incredible. And that was not having the benefit at all of seeing anybody except the conductor.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and again, their platform is going to support wonderful, you know, the audio texture is going to be wonderful. I mean, John and I have done some Zoom performances. And I even said to him, I don't like it because the sound quality isn't great. They can't hear us.
Right.
We can't. But that's just, you know, us. But they have a platform that's, you know, financially backed. So they could, you know, obviously make sure all their performers can hear every nuance of everybody's instrument. So, yeah, but that's, I thought you would find that interesting, that even areas that we think we've seen everything, we think that, okay, well, I know this has changed, but this hasn't changed. That's even changed when we were told 12 feet apart because of the spray. It made logical sense, but it was like, wow, oh, yeah, didn't think of it. So, very interesting.
Well, I've seen a performance where they had the singer on stage and in a pew set up of seats. They had the orchestra, one person in one seat far left, one person stage right, one person stage left. So scattered, but it all worked. You know, and the sound was great. You know, the tech stuff was so important. But, yeah, what a challenge. I can understand why you didn't like it, honestly, though. You don't get that spark, that connection.
No. And I mean, I, you know, again, as a bass player, I was okay because I was back with John, who's on drums.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, but I like to be able to look at, you know, the brass section. I like to be able to venture out, you know, and walk past where I was and just look at somebody who's soloing. And you can't do it. So it was, and the people that were there, some of them were older than us. So they were very nervous, especially the wind players. They were very nervous, so they really wanted to do their parts and get out, you know. And they, you know, there wasn't really any socializing much after. Play your parts, get it down, out. So the dynamic and community feeling was kind of gone. So, yeah.
But you still have your music outlet, and that's good.
Yeah,
that's really good.
That's exactly right. You have to. You know, again, it's not what it was, but it's,
you know, it's something, and we'll get back. We'll hit the wood again. That's for sure. We'll definitely hit the stage, but you know, not right away.
And I feel like if people really want to make it work, they do, you know, if it's the passion.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I know for you, Lori, music's a big passion. So you find a way.
Yeah. But you know, like I said, it's not what it was, but it's something. And eventually it'll get back. We just have to, you know.
It will.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time.
It was fun. The other day, my assistant was telling me that, well, you know, last year at this time, we already had the Christmas party booked. And I usually used, Meryl, you probably know this restaurant on 6th and 57th, the Wayfarer.
Oh, of course. And they're closed.
Yeah. And there's, you know, a homeless population in front of there. And it's just amazing because this year, John and I and some friends were going. They had these brunches before the Thanksgiving parade, and you get there at 7 o'clock, and they give you a nice little corner table, and you get to watch the float. And we were saying, you know what, this year we're going to do it. John doesn't like to get up early, but we're going to do it this year. Eh, you know, and it's just amazing. But then there are some restaurants that Roof 57 is doing wonderful, and that's diagonal for me. And yeah, you know,
is it because of their outdoor? Are they doing well indoors as well?
I think they're doing well indoors as well. And they're one of the few that I've heard. They're not buzzing, but I don't think they're feeling nervous. I think they're constant flow of people, and yeah. So, look, if there's one, there's got to be two. If there's two, there's got to be three. So
that would be nice to hear, because the office building situation in Midtown is terrible. You know, they're saying maybe 15% of workers are actually going into buildings. So the lunch business is dead. You know, the lunch business, Midtown, is really dead.
Yeah.
Fine dining, the power lunch and all, not happening.
Well, think about this. It's 7, and I know when I take the trains. So I could always get a seat on the train. I'm never standing anymore. There's no such thing as rush hour. So if 70% of the population is working from home, nobody's going in. So,
and in contrast, the Upper East Side, for example, every lunch place is packed outdoors.
Is that right?
Every place packed outdoors.
Wow.
And even into the evening, because everybody wants to eat out while they can, but nobody's going to Midtown.
Yeah, I know. Well, like
and
I said,
the same was true in the Upper West Side when I was there last week. You know, the purely residential areas are alive, which is very, very encouraging. I just hope something continues well into the winter.
Yeah.
Excuse me, one second.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Well, John and I went out to, I think, Liz, you saw the picture. We went out to a favorite place of ours on Midtown, Playwrights Tavern. And we love that place, and we've always gone to that place. And, you know, we got there about 8 o'clock, and they have the 10 o'clock curfew, you know, marked. And, you know, they said, you want to sit outside or inside? And I said, you know what, let's sit inside. You know, let's be the ones to go inside. And, you know, everybody was masked. And it was absolutely, and that place is a place, if you want a martini, you will get a martini that you envision in your head. Absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. The martini, I mean, just a wonderful place, and always, we've been going there for years. So that was kind of nice to see. That was very nice to
see. That's nice.
Yeah. So Meryl Kirsten, before you leave us, is there anything that you want to give your website? Shout out your website.
Okay, so if anybody wants to see my general website, it's mdppublicity.com. But if you'd rather see an example of my writing, the best place to go is my name, which is Meryl Pearlstein, MerylPearlstein.contently, contently.com. And I have two columns that are happening in full strength that you might be interested in reading. One is called AllNewYork.com. It's ALLNY.com.
Mm-hmm.
And every article there is mine. And then the other one is on Ware Traveler. If you go in and Google my name, you'll see lots of articles that I've been writing, not just about New York, but about every place
in general,
with a large focus on dining and the arts.
Mm. Perfect.
Oh, how cool.
And
you
also
do
health
a lot
and
of
spas
the arts
and everything.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
spas
you.
Spas and everything.
Everything. Everything.
Yeah,
I'm finished. Actually, I'm working on two articles right now. I just put one up on outdoor dining in New York City, and I'm creative outdoor dining, like igloos and bubbles and tents and stuff like that. And I'm finishing up another one that's more up about outside of New York, where they seem to be less restrictive than New York. You know, New York has definite rules about igloos and enclosed spaces, and somehow the other states are getting away with other things. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm doing that right now, and I have a guide for Thanksgiving dining, things that are topical of the moment. So go to WhereTraveler.com, and you'll see a lot of my current pieces.
That's great.
And you know, I'm going to ask you to text me all this later so I can put it up tomorrow, because I'm like, I can't write that fast. So,
I'm busier than ever with writing. It seems like people are just reading. You know, they want information.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
God bless.
You do want information during a time like this. You do.
I think so. It's vicarious. It's vicarious.
Yeah.
Thank
you, Meryl. And you'll be on again.
My pleasure. Thank
you
so much for having me again. It's always a pleasure.
And happy Thanksgiving, darling. And my best
wishes. Oh, thank you.
Thanksgiving.
And if you come up with any ideas for how I'm going to celebrate my birthday next month, because I can't think of anything. It's just going to be December, and it's going to be freezing. And I think,
baby doll, I'm celebrating tomorrow at the Russian Tea Room.
Ooh. So,
yeah.
Congrats.
Thank you. I was saying to John, if it's open tomorrow, we'll go. If not, we have pizza. So,
are you going to eat outside? Dine outside?
I think so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
No, I would, if
we'll
you could,
see.
If they have it.
I'm
just worried about December. I don't know what I'll be able to do.
I know.
Nothing.
I'll think of something. But you know what? You chalk off one birthday and you could celebrate it any other time. Even if it's a milestone, you could still do it in March.
It
Who
is
cares?
A milestone
or
birthday. That's why I'm a little sad, but whatever.
you're only going to be 40, right?
Of course. Again.
I love it. Thank you, man. I'll talk to you later, sweetheart.
All right.
Happy holidays.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye bye. You too, darling. Bye bye.
She is really busy.
Along. She is busy, and you know what's interesting about her. And she and I go back probably, let's say 20 years now. And it's funny because she travel and leisure. There'd be times I text her, and she's, I'm in Finland. Oh, I'm in Japan. Okay, well,
really?
When I come home, we'll do that. Yeah. She's very well traveled. And, you know, this is probably the first year that she's in New York for the holidays, because she's usually elsewhere. So
right, doing her work. And boy, what did you say you were celebrating? I didn't hear. Celebrating tomorrow night?
My birthday. We're going to Russian Tea.
Oh, my God.
She was saying, well, that's okay. I just said it because her birthday is December 6th, I think her birthday is. So she was saying that her
birthday
is coming up.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, darling. It's not yet. But John is already saying
midnight. I didn't know if you said
midnight.
Anniversary or birthday. Okay.
Birthday. The anniversary was June 17th. I block it out.
You guys are going to go out, right?
Yeah. John said he wanted to take me to the Russian Tea Room. And the only reason I would go there, honestly, it sounds like it's highfalutin, but the prices are good. The prices are really good, and it's in my neighborhood. It's across the street from my office. So I kind of feel like I'm supporting the community. You know what I'm saying? Because, honestly, that's the only restaurant
really
that's
great
open.
About.
It's going to be a nice night out, but, you know, I feel better that, you know, it's keeping something afloat, you know, every little bit helps.
Right.
So, but yeah,
no,
I'm
glad
all over
the
place.
Do that.
Yeah. At first I was like, let's have pizza. I want to stay home. I don't want to go out.
But yeah, he likes to go out too, so it'll be a nice night out. So your Thanksgiving, darling, is just you and the kids and John?
So far, usually as it gets closer, you know, maybe one of our older sons will say, you know, I got invited to this person's house, a family, not like a party.
Yeah.
But we are so last minute, this family. I need to get a count on what we're going to do. And one year I took it upon myself to make my own turkey, and I thought, oh, I'm going to make it organic. It's going to be amazing and beautiful. And the whole family got sick. So
why?
I don't know. No, I don't know what I did, Lori. I followed the recipe. They're like, no, you did not follow the recipe, Mom. We're all sick. So I know it sounds like I was not trying to get them sick. I am not the best cook. So we might go with a Latin meal to celebrate my husband's heritage, because his birthday is the following week. And I can't go wrong with that, because then, like, sometimes we do breaded chicken with, like, a pico de gallo on the side.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, plantains. It's different. It's very different. It's not the traditional way, but we make it traditional.
You know, it's the act of sitting together for a meal. And
that's all it is.
Yeah, but I'm thinking maybe you don't cook the turkey well. That's the only reason it would have gotten sick.
Turkey. I don't think we've been able to have a turkey since then. So it's horrible, and I was so proud of them. They all
but
sat
did it
down
taste
and
bad?
Just,
did it taste bad when you were?
No, but it was the type of thing where you got to keep eating to convince yourself it tasted good. I don't think you wanted to hurt my feelings. So I am not good at meals. I'm really great at small meals or like a bunch of little things. And I think I need to stick to that. So, you know, they'll be okay. Trust me. They're not going to starve.
No. Look, if you want, you could just, because John and I are just going to be us. You know, I'm going to see my father-in-law in the nursing home and maybe bring him something. But we're not going to, I'll make salmon for myself and I'll make a little something for him. He's not big on tradition, so if we just order a pizza, that would be okay, too. It doesn't, you know, it's okay, you know. It's okay.
And sometimes we enjoy doing, like, an tradition thing. They seem to enjoy the traditional turkey more when it's the entire family because I'm not cooking it. So, I'm sorry. No one's ever going to want my turkey again. So, because my sister-in-law has a way of doing it that's absolutely insane. And, but they were good sports about it until the next day. But that's the end of that story, and I'll do something that's kind of like
you'll rally,
And Lori, do you eat? You eat a lot of salmon because I do too.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I don't eat chicken. I don't eat anything that had parents. And the only reason I eat salmon is because a friend of mine who's also a vegetarian said, because I always feel bad about having something. I ate something that was alive and living life, and I cut it short. When they catch a salmon is already going upriver to end its life. So it's okay to eat a salmon. Their life is already going to be cut short because they mate and they go upstream and that's it. So
that's how you
catch a salmon.
I did not know that.
And I felt a lot better because I can't, you know, and most of my friends eat meat and stuff. I just can't because I'll picture a cow. I'll picture a pig. I will picture a turkey. Can't eat anything that I could pet and kiss and love. So, a salmon, that's
yeah,
too much.
I stopped
and the fact that
I did.
Yeah. So, and that's it. And years ago, I was even saying before, I was a huge meat eater. I would have meat for 3 meals a day, but just can't do it anymore.
Yeah. And I think once you stop, you just can't do it anymore.
No. I mean, I still love the smell of a steak. There's nothing better to bring myself to eat it. I just won't. So I get my protein from fish and chickpeas and stuff like that. That's all. And now they have the plant-based protein.
which
I know,
is phenomenal.
So
if you haven't tried it, it's just wonderful.
Delicious.
You should. Oh my God, you wouldn't know. Blindfold test. We had a barbecue this summer, and we had people over, and we had regular burgers, and then we had the protein, the plant protein. You couldn't tell.
Oh.
You could
no,
not
I know.
Tell.
They make it to where you can't tell.
Oh, wonderful. It's
delicious.
Wonderful. Yeah. So Gemma
well,
moment.
I'm happy it's your birthday. So.
Well, thank you. But I want a Gemma moment. Give us a Gemma moment. People are sitting
Gemma,
on the edge
okay.
of their seats. Yeah.
Well, I
They're
have
waiting.
A facial coming up. I'm becoming the skin Gemma skincare woman lately. I got a sample kit from Charisma, which was very kind, Lisa, to the founder, to do that. And you know, it's always a little bit like it might sound silly, a little nerve-wracking when they say I want the honest truth, but I genuinely loved her samples, all of them. It's like a little mini spa, Lori, because it's all oil-based. So you have like a cleanser and then a face polish and a honey mask, and then you put on your facial oil, and then and then you don't use moisturizer after all these oil-based, you know, formulations. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you're ready for your foundation. Every day I've been saying to John, you can tell a difference, right? You can tell a difference, right? But I say it so aggressively, I think I'm scaring him. He's like, yes, I see a difference. I see a difference. And so.
But you have beautiful skin anyway.
No.
You have
No.
You should. Yes, you do. Yes, yes.
Well, thank you. But, you know, on Facebook, we all look our best, as I will say. And so I've been enjoying using that. And so I have a facial on Saturday, which I thought would be great before the cooking starts, you know. I'm already nervous for the cooking 4 days later. And so I have a lot of skincare articles coming out, and I hope to have someone on Friday for my Fashion Friday live stream. I really do. I just want to get that back in order. But I've been having so many articles, it's been a little bit challenging.
Yeah. No, I get it. I totally get it. What I usually do is I had columns years ago. I repurpose all my columns, my Fitness Fridays, things that I had in Shape magazine. I just repurpose. And I just said this way I have things that are current and what I need to nip and tuck to make it, you know, applicable to what's going on today. I just do that.
Right.
It makes it so much easier, believe me. It makes it so much easier.
Yeah. I got to get on a schedule, but I am excited about Saturday morning, and let's hope nothing goes wrong. I will not hear a dog barking, that is for sure. Okay.
No, nothing. And you know what? If you do, you do. It's like, look, like what we're doing now is live radio. Back in the day when they just had live shows, everything that can go wrong will go wrong, and it usually did, and so what? You know, the audience always loves bloopers. The audience, why do you think people used to love watching Carol Burnett? Because they wanted to see Harvey Korman laughing at Tim Conway and screwing up his line.
Right.
People are okay with that. We're the ones that suffer. We're the ones that hate when things go wrong. But people don't
care.
I
know.
So don't worry about your little dog. Your little doggy coming in. No. You know what? Let your dog come in. Introduce your dog to everybody so we could enjoy her. And we could say, oh, I'm going to send. You know what you do when stuff like that happens? People watching. You love my dog. Send me a picture of your dog and get the people interactive.
No, I thought about that, but she barks at cell phones. So,
but, you know, I mean.
I thought that's going to be weird. She's just barking at everybody, you know?
Well, on a live stream, can people just put their pictures in and it not make a sound? I mean, I don't know.
I guess.
I've never sent a picture. Yeah, so do that. If your dog comes in, bring her into the conversation, make her feel part of it. She probably just fall asleep and lay there. But it's true. It's true, honey. Make her part of it.
That is so funny. That is
she's,
so funny.
She'll make her, you know, she's your scene partner. She'll come in, and then the minute you give in to her, she'll stop. And she'll just sit at your feet, and you go on with your broadcast. That's it.
Yeah, she's definitely become my partner in everything.
Oh.
But she has. She
stuck, like, just sticks by me. It is the craziest thing. She's asleep right now next to me. She hasn't made a sound. I know.
No,
and,
so there you go.
I guess, you know, she'll look up and be like, I'm not sure about that comment, Mom, but that's okay.
And wearing that little nub of a tail, that she's got. Oh, she's so beautiful.
I know. She is a sweetheart. She is.
Yeah.
But it was, thank you, Lori. I had a great time today.
Absolutely, honey. And that's our show, and it went fast. We thank Pamela Silvestri and Meryl Pearlstein for joining us and giving us the hard cold facts on restaurants. And you know what? That's what we need. We can't sugarcoat things, but I think within all of that, there was an air of optimism, and I think that's certainly what we enjoy. My co-host, the lovely Elizabeth Colossos, holding up and down the West Coast. So what should I say? Holding down the West Coast or holding up? Whatever you feel comfortable doing, that's what you're doing. And thank you for joining me today. And everybody else, go out and make it a wonderful day and do something productive. Be kind, if nothing else, and be safe. This is still here. This is serious.
Right.
Wear a friggin' mask. Don't be a big shot, because it's not just about you. It's about your grandmother. It's about your mother. It's about your aunt. It's about people that you probably care about. And even if you don't, why take a life? So in saying that, goodbye, Lizzie. I love you. And we'll talk soon. And everybody, have a wonderful day. Nina, take us home.